in and for the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. First case of the morning is Nikelos Kekalos versus Commissioner. Mr. Morrison.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. This is an income tax case involved in 1997. It was tried to the tax court in a bench trial. I was the lawyer for the appellants at the trial court, and the case is hereby direct appeal. The case on appeal involves the what are called buy-downs, which are discounts given by cigarette manufacturers to retailers of cigarettes, and the case involves that as well as penalties.
Mr. Morrison, I would like to ask you something right off the bat, to just get something clear, because you are now claiming that coupon and buy-down money was not income at all, but simply savings from the manufacturer passed to the customer through the taxpayer. Is that, am I right so far?
Basically what happens is this, Judge. It's easiest for me to give it by an example. A customer walks into the store and buys a carton of cigarettes. And let's say the price of the carton of cigarettes is $20, just to make it easy. And there's a buy-down program in place. Then the cashier will ring up $20, then punch a button that says coupons minus $2.
Right. So I honestly understand that.
Okay.
And I don't want you to waste your time. But if that is true, okay, why did Mr. Kekalos report the over 650,000 in coupon and buy down income on his tax return?
Okay, the way that works, Judge, is that he considers those monies, even though he doesn't get them, as a cash equivalent, and so he reports them when the sale is made. And the way he does that is on the cash register tape. At the end of the day, they have what's called a Z tape, where it prints out everything that happened that day. And so what he does, and I'm not sure exactly why he does it, that Z tape prints out something called coupons. And that number he captures as a separate item on his tax return. And why he does it, I'm not suggesting in any way that he's over-reporting his income by doing that. He just separates those two things out when he does his tax return.
But he didn't give all of those to the IRS, did he? Those.
When you say he didn't give all of them, Judge, the records?
Right.
Yes, he did. He did give all the records. All the records that all of the records that were used to purchase these cashier's checks, which is an issue in this case, were given by Mr. Kekalos to the IRS agent, and they were given to the IRS agent in March of 2000, which is like 15 months before this audit was concluded. The agent then, in addition to that, went out and contacted a lot of these cigarette companies to try to get some independent information about the records that you wanted to look at. I'm not sure if I've answered your question, Judge.
Go ahead. Go on.
But in essence, we're complaining about three things here. We take the position that the court allowed the government to change its method of proof after the trial was over. Second of all, that even there was clear error in upholding the determination that the court bought into, that the government propounded in its post-trial brief, and that the negligence determination was also made with clear error. With regard to the change in the method of proof, we view it as our burden. The IRS makes a determination in this case. That determination is based on what the IRS did, agent did in the 2 years of audit. This audit began in June of 1999 and was concluded in June of 2001. So we look preliminarily, we look at this case, and it doesn't make sense to us that a man who's been in business for 25-plus years at this point in 1997, he's got $14 or $15 million of sales. He's selling a third to a half of his sales are cigarettes. The manufacturer tells us that these people are scrupulously honest in their dealings with us. We know that these cigarette companies don't throw their money away. They police the buy-down programs. They want to make sure that these customers are getting credit for the buy-downs. It would take the connivance of a lot of people because there are four stores involved here. They're open 6 days a week, and they've got at least two shifts going. He's got a payroll of about $600,000. In order to pull this off, he'd have to be cheating his customers and cheating the cigarette companies, and he'd have to have a lot of people in his store helping him do that. That doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, that $777,000 figure that Agent Risk was trying to verify,
right,
that came from a spreadsheet that was produced by Mr. Kikalos.
It did.
And now Mr. Kikalos seems to be claiming that the spreadsheet was wrong and that he was just learning how to use the computer. And it's as if Agent Risk pulled the number out of thin air when, in fact, it came from his own records.
It did. It did come from his own records.
I mean, there really is a lot I don't understand, I'm afraid, because, for instance, in the new theory argument, you conceded that using a new theory is allowable as long as it's not inconsistent with the original allegation. It doesn't require new evidence in support, and it doesn't increase the amount of any deficiency. Which of those factors was violated here? Because the allegation is the same. It's underreporting of cigarette company income. The evidence is identical, and Mr. Kikalos wasn't asked to pay any more than the amount in the deficiency notice, even though they came up with, I think, twice the amount. What is
Judge,
the problem?
Respectfully, we would take the position that the proof is different. And the proof with regard to the $777,000, to address that, there were several spreadsheets that were given to the IRS agent. One of them, you know, we can't deny what they did come from the taxpayer, and it did contain $777,000. He told her that was wrong. And there were other spreadsheets. But what she did then was she set about trying to verify what was on that spreadsheet. And she had, incidentally, Judge, for 15 months prior to the close of her audit, she had the records that the government relies on after the trial is over. And those records that they're relying on are these cashier's checks and their statement, which apparently the tax court judge just accepted the government's representation as to the number of cigarette checks. That was one factor, $500,000+ in cigarette checks.
Yeah, but he provided documentation about the cashier's checks to the IRS, but he didn't provide that information to his very own accountant. And if he hasn't provided documentation showing that there's overlap between the money used to produce, or rather the money used to purchase the cashier's checks and the $400,000 that was recorded by the accountant, why should we be asked to assume that there is an overlap?
Well, Judge, if you look at those checks that were used to buy the cashier's checks, you'll see that they are occurring in virtually every month of 1997, I think with the exception of the month of September. So in those cashier's checks, you'll see cigarette company checks that have been issued throughout the year, throughout the same period through October, the 29 out of those 32 checks are in the period up to October. Then there's testimony about the $400,000 entry that your Honor described, and the testimony is by the accountant. It is true that she said that she was not told about these. There's also a question in there: What did Mr. Kiklos tell you about that? And she says, "I don't remember," which suggests maybe there was a conversation.
Of course, he testified that he bought the cashier's checks in amounts less than $10,000 to avoid federal reporting requirements.
I don't think that's a fair characterization of what he said, Judge.
No.
He was asked, the question that came up was in connection with an issue that's not before the court, but the question that came up was to the effect that why didn't you just take, I'm not sure how to describe this, but he was purchasing checks from the store. Checks would come into the store, he would give cash for them, or he would cash his employees' checks and take those checks to buy the cashier's checks. This is a business, Judge, that takes in about $300,000 in cash per year. They're dealing with cash all the time. There's no way for them to avoid currency transaction reporting requirements, which kick in at the amount of $10,000. His testimony is that he's afraid of the IRS. If you look at the prior litigation, and there was a case before the Seventh Circuit that didn't involve this unreported income. It involved an interest deduction. But you can see from that case, if not from the record in this case, that these people have had a lot of trouble with the IRS over the years. They've been audited many times, and it's recited in that case.
Of course, when you're as creative as the Piccolos seem to be, I guess the IRS takes interest in you.
Well, each time, and I represented him in the trial of that previous case that was before this court, each time it's a different issue that comes up. And this is a man who's got an eighth-grade education. He's an immigrant to this country. He's an astute businessman, but he's not, you know, the kind of record keeper that he would be if he, you know, he were more sophisticated in that regard.
Of course, that's why he has an accountant, and that's why you have to tell the accountant everything.
Right.
I guess.
But I've got my white light on now, so I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Thanks, Mr. Morris.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brandman?
Robert Brandman for the United States. I'll keep my comments brief. First thing I can say to help sort of narrow things down, there are a number of issues that the court needn't be concerned with. The appeal here is from the decision of the tax court. Many of the issues that Mr. Morrison raises address the details of the IRS's audit, incorrect assumptions that the revenue agent made that the tax court didn't repeat, erroneous spreadsheets that the IRS officer revenue agent used that the tax court made no use of. This business about whether Mr. Kiklos was cheating his customers or cheating the cigarette manufacturing companies. There was some suggestion of that during the audit, but it's not really part of the government's case at all. Whether he was cheating one person or another doesn't matter. What's important is that he was getting checks from the cigarette companies, and was he reporting that income in his books? And we contend that the tax court found he did not establish that he had been doing so.
Can you explain how the coupon and the buy down money were income to him? Are you claiming that the stores collected full price from customers and then got reimbursed from cigarette companies for savings that were not passed on to the customers?
No.
No.
If the cigarette store got the full price for the cigarettes, if they cost $20 a carton, Mr. Kiklos got $20 a carton. He may have gotten $15 from the customer and $5 from the manufacturer, but he needed to report $20 worth of income for the transaction, whether it's from one source or another. He contends, I guess, his central contention is that he reported the the receipt of the $20 from the customer, and therefore he didn't need to keep track of the checks when they came in from the cigarette manufacturers. And if indeed he reported it all at the point of sale, then he wouldn't need to report it as income again, although he probably should have kept better track of those receipts by informing his, by perhaps running them through his business bank account and informing his accountant of them. But the point on which his case falls apart is that he was not able to establish that he did report the full price, receipt of the full price from the customers in his register receipts.
Was there an indication that he was, let's just use your example of the $15 and $5 spread, that he was reporting a sale of $15 as opposed to $20 and therefore didn't report the $5, whatever you want to call it, coupon that he actually received? Is that what was going on, do you think?
I'm not sure. There was a dispute in the tax court whether whether he provided all. He says he provided all the register receipts to the agent. She says she asked for them, but she didn't get them. But the point is, he brought in only one day's worth of register receipts to the tax court for one of his four stores, for one day in December 1996, which is not a year at issue, and one day in December 1997, which is the year at issue. And the tax court found that that was not a sufficient sample to make the case that he had reported the buy down amounts as income at the register.
When you mentioned the years just now, it made me think of something. The court concluded that there was something like, I don't know, almost 900,000 of buy down and coupon income for 1997.
Yes.
How did that number compare? Well, will the record tell us how that number compared to 96 and 98, the year before and after the audit? What I'm trying to figure out is that figure out a line in some way?
I don't know. I haven't seen in the record the 96 or 98
okay.
figure. There are a few other reported decisions involving Mr. Kiklos that I've read through. There's a mention of the buy-down income in one of them, but I don't remember the amount or even if the amount is stated, so I can't answer that.
Okay.
Assuming that the tax court was justified in concluding that Mr. Kiklos had not established that the buy-down income was reported at the point of sale, then the only question is, well, how much buy-down income was there? And the tax court used the evidence adduced at trial. It was not exactly the same evidence that the IRS used, but it was still trying to determine the same amount. How much buy-down income did he have? It would have been a new theory if the IRS had said, well, all right, maybe he didn't have any buy-down income, but he had this completely unrelated source of income, and we're going to use that to support our deficiency determination. That's not what happened. It's just a different mathematical analysis and use of different evidence that was introduced at trial to determine what his buy-down income was. And I have nothing further unless there are questions.
Was this use of the money orders or whatever they call it. What are you,
cashier's
what,
checks.
Pardon me?
The cashier's checks.
Cashier's checks. Was that an alert that caused this kind of an audit because of that? It's sort of an unusual procedure. And he says he did it because didn't like the IRS and didn't want to have to alert them to a $10,000 transaction, I guess.
Well, not liking the IRS is not unusual, no. But
yeah, well, we all can identify with that, I guess.
There was an alert. The Mercantile National Bank, which was receiving these third-party checks and using them to sell as a consideration for cashier's checks, reported to the IRS that there was unusual activity in the number of cashier's checks that was being sold. And I don't recall whether it was because they were in amounts more than $10,000 or just because in the aggregate they were a large amount. And I believe Mr. Kiklos' testimony was not specifically that he was trying to avoid the $10,000 reporting requirement, but that he was afraid of the IRS, and that's why he was purchasing the cashier's checks. Of course, Mr. Kiklos was obviously on the IRS's radar for a number of years, so I don't know that tip from the bank was what initiated this audit, but it is certainly what gave this audit focus. Some of the earlier audits were more comprehensive, and this one was very focused at just this source of income and a few other smaller sources of income.
Thank you.
Mr. Morrison.
Thank you.
I just want to answer Judge Rovner, your question. There is an exhibit in this case. It's exhibit number 21P, I think. And it shows that in 1996 there were $662,473 in coupons out is what it's called, which means coupons that have been rung up on the cash register.
Do these coupons come from the customer, or are they directly to the vendor?
There are two things. They use the word coupon to cover two situations. One is where a customer comes in with something that may be cut out of a newspaper. Right. And the second one is a program that's called a buy-down program that the cigarette manufacturers utilize that tell the retailer, look, when you ring these cigarettes up, if the $5 spread that Mr. Brandman used for an example, if that's in place, then every time you sell our cigarettes, you knock $5 off the price.
For whom?
And
them?
For the customer.
For the customer.
For the customer.
So it's a reduced, the customer pays $15, and that's what's rung up on the cash register.
Well, what's rung up on the cash register is $20, and then following that is minus $5 hitting the coupon key. That's how these numbers are kept track of internally by the store.
Well, that's just for your internal information, I suppose.
Right, but that also, when Judge Rovner asked me the question about why is that separately stated on the report, it is because that's broken out on the cash register reports that's given. I want to also just briefly discuss this question of the cash register tapes. There's no complaint in any of the agent's work papers about not being given access to the cash register tapes. In fact, there's some testimony that she gave at page 52 in the transcript when she was asked about the $600,000 that was reported as coupons, and she says that's the amount that went through the cash register. That was reported through the cash register. Now, I mean, I don't know how she could know that if she didn't have some access to the cash register tapes.
Well, you're saying that she had all the cash registers?
She had access to them. She had access to them. That's
if she had access to them, why didn't Mr. Kikalos bring them in?
Well, Judge, we don't think that we brought in. I see my light is out.
Sure.
I don't know if I can.
No, you still have a minute.
They would not prove what the government is alleging here. All they would show is what was rung up on the cash register, and their theory is that what was rung up on the cash register, which is the $600,000, is not an accurate figure. So those cash register tapes are something like 45 miles long, and they would not prove what the government seems to think that they would prove in any event.
I know, but when the government asks for something, we give it to them.
Right. Well, there was no asking for that during the course of these proceedings, Judge. There was no subpoena. There was no discovery. They never asked for those. And I'm telling you something that's not in the record in this case. But
yeah. Hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Very much. This case will be taken under advisement.